Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoeffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. Assuring that highway bridges are both safe and functional is a challenging task because of the scale of the road networks we deal with and the fact that funds are limited. Setting priorities for keeping those bridges in the state of good repair is essential because deterioration and failures can create major economic and life safety impacts. To learn more about how a state transportation department works to assure that bridges are in good repair, we've invited Todd Springer to join us. Todd is Assistant State Structure and Bridge Engineer for Design and Project Delivery at the Virginia Department of Transportation. Welcome to the Infrastructure Show, Todd.
Hello. Hello.
So first of all, tell us what's the role of your group in VDOT?
Well, there's two groups. I recently moved into the design and project delivery, but I just am still completing the function. It's the it's a bridge management program area where we look at bridge management modeling, look at deterioration, projections of bridges and funding needs and so on. We also help with the performance management, looking where our conditions are going and so on. And we do programming of new projects, and that's where the State of Good Repair program comes in. So
I understand from looking at your bio that you're trained as, I assume, certified as a bridge inspector?
It's not required for that position. We have a safe bridge safety inspection group, and it is a requirement to have that certification. But in my early years, I did a lot of bridge inspection, and I am certified as a bridge inspector.
So you know the outside part of the job?
I know the entirety.
Yes. Okay, good. So let me ask you a simpler question. What do you mean when you use the phrase state of good repair?
State of good repair is the program is to keep our inventory in a state of good repair. We're preserving the network so that we have the right balance of bridges in good, fair, and poor condition. It's a sustainable program, and we spend a lot of time looking at the projection of the inventory and so on to keep it in a reasonably good shape.
Yes. So did you want to finish that?
Well, I could, like, for the State of Good Repair program specifically, for example, it focuses on bridges that have reached poor condition, and it's looking at replacing the bridges or comprehensively restoring the structure. That program, by the way, doesn't add traffic capacity to the bridges. We have other programs that fund those kinds of needs. And, if we wanted to replace a bridge and widen it, you'd need a dual application on a project like that. But we have other funding programs that handle the lesser issues with the bridges, the maintenance items, and so on. So collectively, our whole methodology keeps our system in good repair.
So am I understanding correctly that in the work that you do on state of good repair, that you're looking specifically at bridges that are in the category of structurally deficient?
Yes, and structurally deficient is a term that actually has been removed by FHWA, and they've gone to good, fair, poor, and a bridge that's in poor condition, it has a general condition rating of 4 or less. It doesn't suggest a safety concern, but the structure does require usually repairs, and it's getting to that point that it'll eventually require a repair or replacement to address the issues.
Yeah, I wonder, I'm not sure, this is not in your territory, but my sense is that getting rid of the term structurally deficient helps eliminate some confusion in people understanding what we're saying when we talk about bridge condition. But take me back to how you set priorities for investing in bridges. What's the process that you use?
Okay, so A couple of years back, we had a bill that was passed, and then it was actually brought into the Code of Virginia that we're to have a priority ranking system and equitable or a data-driven process for distributing funds across the state.
Todd, is that the VDOT Smart Scale program?
No, the Smart Scale is for capacity and safety. State of Good Repair is to keep bridges and pavements in a state of good repair.
Okay, sorry. So go ahead and tell us about the process.
Sure. And then there was we have a Commonwealth Transportation Board that passed a resolution, and then my division provided some pretty detailed guidance on a priority formula, and we have a five-factor priority formula. It has an importance factor, which measures the relative importance of each bridge to the overall network, a condition factor, which looks at the physical condition of the bridge, a design redundancy factor, which is more of a risk factor. It looks at if the bridge is fracture critical, and if it has scour susceptibility, fatigue, or seismic vulnerability. And then we have a structure capacity factor, which really is the functionality of the bridge. Is it weight posted? Does it have vertical clearance or deck width issues and so on? And then we have a cost effectiveness factor, which it's not so much like a benefit cost. It's more of a bridge management network level formulation that says, are we doing the right fix to the bridge given the condition of the bridge, and it balances out with the other four factors. So we've developed, based on data sources that we have. We have our bridge inventory database, and that database, by the way, has a lot of traffic data and other data that's in there too. So we use the data from our database to run what we'd call the initial scoring to identify our higher ranked bridges that should be worked on. We weight those factors too. The importance factor has a weight of 30%. The condition factor has a weight of 20%. The design redundancy, again, risk is weighted at about 15%. The structure capacity or functionality factor is 10%, and that cost effectiveness factor is then 20%. So you get each of those factors get a score. We apply the weighting, and then each bridge gets a score. That's our initial scoring, but I'll let you see if you have a follow-up question, because we then do a bridge-specific review as well, but I can go into that now.
Okay, I definitely want to hear about that, but let me take you back and ask you some questions so that we understand better. Some of the condition data, as I understand, is really coming from field inspections. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and the periodicity of inspections, is it generally 2 years?
It depends on the condition of the bridge. So the maximum duration for NBI bridges by federal code is 2 years. Now, if we have a bridge that's reached poor condition, we drop that inspection frequency to once a year. If we really have some significant current concerns, it could be down to 6 months or even 3 months. And, periodically something will come up where we've inspected a bridge every 3 months until we can get it addressed.
Oh, interesting. I wasn't aware of that. So, and you use the initials NBI, that's the National Bridge Inventory, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you also mentioned under the design category a couple of factors that I'd like to learn more about. One is redundancy. So how do you characterize that?
Redundancy is, I think, largely defined by FHWA. It's a fracture critical structure. We're more focused on steel bridges because they tend to have the major fracture or cracks that can lead to catastrophic collapse or stuff like that. So there is a category of bridges, trusses. If you had a pier with two steel columns or There are certain members that unfortunately have to be used now and then that have not so much redundancy and they're made of steel. So in those types of bridges, they have special inspections. There's a fracture critical bridge inspection that we complete. And you know, as those structures deteriorate, you know, we may increase the frequency of inspection on those.
So when you the term fracture critical, normally applied to steel structures and to members that are in tension, is that right?
Correct.
And fracture critical means if you lose that member, you're at risk of losing the bridge.
Correct.
Okay. So I just want to tie that back because that's really why the term redundancy applies. That is, if there's a backup structural member and you lose the primary, you're still okay. But if you don't have redundancy, then you're in trouble.
Correct. And the steel members in tension are they do. Steel does crack due to fatigue over time, mm-hmm. or distortional forces that go in. You have concrete girders out there that may not have as much redundancy, but they're a lot more robust, so there tends to be less concern with those.
This is kind of going in a different direction, but when you're building new bridges, do you tend to use concrete more than steel now?
No, I mean, it's really, you avoid certain details that we've learned cause problems. So there's a lot of trial and error in civil engineering history, so we've learned what doesn't work well, and we avoid those details wherever possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I wanted to go back to the criterion structural capacity. Is that determined in the office rather than in the field? Is it an analytic process?
And what do you mean the factor or just structural capacity?
Well, that was one of the factors that you considered in this algorithm to rank bridges.
Yeah, so that would tie back to weight posting, and we do regular load ratings on bridges. If the condition of the bridge drops and there's more deterioration, we'd update the load rating, and if the bridge needs to be posted or we need to reduce the posting, then we'll update the posting. So we on a regular basis keep an eye on the capacity of the structure from a weight restriction perspective if needed.
So when you're doing that, what I assume is that you're looking at the condition of the bridge and then going back and doing replicating the structural analysis to estimate the weight capacity?
Exactly. That's on a regular basis.
Okay, so I do remember some of my civil engineering from days in the past. In the cost effectiveness category, how does that work?
Yeah, so that's we developed a pretty innovative approach. We're trying to balance a bridge. If you have a bridge that's just starting to, when a bridge initially falls into the poor category, there's a pretty decent range in what you call poor, even with a bridge with a general condition rating of 4. If it's just moved into that range and you could do a pretty low-cost repair to get the condition up to something that's decent, you know, we give it a higher score on that cost-effectiveness factor. But if you want to replace the bridge, you get a lower score on the cost-effectiveness factor. And what that's saying is if the bridge condition is in poor shape, if the importance of the bridge is higher, those get higher scores. If it has a design redundancy issue, it gets a higher score on that factor so that you can do more of a comprehensive repair if those factors have a higher score. So it's an interaction between the cost effectiveness factor and the other 4 factors, really. So basically, bridges that have more traffic, have less redundancy, are in poorer condition, you can do more work on those bridges and get it ranked higher. And if a bridge is less important, its condition isn't that bad, it doesn't have a redundancy issue, it doesn't have a capacity issue, you would get a lower score on the cost effectiveness, or you'd have to choose a repair that was less expensive for that project to get picked. So we're trying to promote doing the bridges that need the work first and letting the bridges that have more minor issues, let those go a little bit further and balance that out.
So it's a way of trying to get the most out of the money that you've got.
It's a network level, very conscious approach to the problem, yes.
And just taking back to this list of criteria, are you also looking at, under the category of importance, you do pay attention to detours. That is, if you have to close a bridge for a period of time, or the cost of the detour, the length of the detour becomes important. Is that fair?
Correct. It's traffic volume, truck traffic, detour length. If it's on a corridor of statewide significance in Virginia and so on. We also have some supplemental, what we call smart flags. The smart flags are for situations like if it's the only bridge leading into a hospital or into a military base, or if it's a bridge going into a subdivision that has no other access. And fire and ambulance can't get in there. It may not be in our database, but when we're going through this follow-on process that I mentioned, we look at special situations for those bridges. Objective, they're standard smart flags, and it will allow you to bump a bridge to the top of the list if one of those situations.
Yeah, so it's sort of like the criticality factor that people are using in resilience analysis, I think, if you're familiar with that. That is, you're looking at a bridge and in more qualitative sense, answering questions about its functionality and the uniqueness of that.
Correct. We do a lot of work. I'm on a committee for resiliency, and there's a pretty close parallel between how we do it. In fact, we're going to be adopting some of that resilience approach into this formulation as well. We already have a little bit of it in, or a good amount of it in, but it's going to be dovetailed into it further.
Yeah, so I guess when we look at changing patterns of natural hazards, wet weather and storms, that this becomes a bigger issue for us.
Yeah. So I mentioned we had a scour was part of the formulation study with inland riverine flooding. Those rainfall intensities seem to be higher. And more water's flowing through, more scour can occur. So we already have scour criticality in there, but we're looking at more at water inundation and so on for bridges inland. And then we have coastal where we're looking at, hurricanes and so on, and looking at what we need to do there as well.
Are you somehow integrating the trends in terms of the changes in natural hazards, increasing frequency or in intensity of storms? Are you using forecasts of that to do your evaluation?
We're to a degree, and we're going to be adding it in further. And we've already started to develop guidance around that.
Oh, okay, very good. So, how do these rankings affect investment decisions? That is, what are the next steps after you do your technical job?
Sure. So we handle the actual project selection and programming. So we start with this initial ranking that I mentioned. Again, databases only have so much data, and a human has not looked at it yet, an engineer. Then we get the engineers and folks to take a look at the bridge itself. It involves a site visit, comprehensively looking at the information surrounding the bridge, how are you going to replace the bridge, and so on and so forth. And at that point, this program has two pools of funding for bridges. One is for VDOT and one is for locality. If it's the locality and they want to submit a bridge in their locality, they actually have to submit all the bridges in poor condition in their locality. And what we're trying to do is get them to hopefully fund their top-ranked bridge from the scoring perspective. If they already have a bridge being addressed through other funding means, they don't need to submit it, but they just need to show that. For VDOT within a district, they look at all the bridges near the top of the list. Again, if they've got a funding method already in place for another bridge through another program, they don't need to submit those. And we take new information and we also apply it. There may have been something in the database that didn't quite make sense, we'll update that. Maybe once we take a closer look at the bridge, we initially assumed a more minor repair and realize a more significant repair, rehab, or replacement is needed. We identify smart flags that apply to the bridge if there are any. We look for synergy with other funding programs. You mentioned Smart Scale earlier. They may be looking at widening the roadway in the area, and they're already going to be doing a project. So we would merge the funding and scope of the two programs and get the most out of our money. So we look at all of those things, and then we re-rank all of the bridges with the updated information and look at how much funding we have available that year and pick the top-ranked bridges and move forward. And the only exception to that is we have an exception request process where we can further adjust the order. It goes up to the chief engineer for approval. If there are other reasons, there could be a further downstream funding of that project needed or some other local need that we have to address, and we may tweak the order. But interestingly, that rarely happens. By and large, we follow the final ranking and we fund the bridges in the order that we finally come up with.
That's really very encouraging. It sounds like you've got a process that's working very well, and I'm particularly intrigued by what I would call the integrated approach that you use in the end. That is, you take the data and use the algorithmic tools that VDOT has developed, but you merge that with on-the-ground knowledge about functionality of the bridge and a qualitative assessment of condition. Also, if I understand correctly, the process is evolving as conditions change and as needs change, which suggests that you're in a pretty good position to keep ahead of the game. Is that your perspective on what's going on here?
Yeah, it's interesting because in the 5 years or 4 years we've done this, we've actually been pretty effective in driving the number of bridges in poor condition down. If you look at the 50 states, and in 2016, we were in the 24th best shape by count, and now we're down to 11th best shape. So if that's a piece of anecdotal information that suggests we're doing well, we're doing well. And the other thing is a lot of bridges were built in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. There are a lot of bridges in fair condition coming our way, and the question right now is, do we tweak the formula to allow those bridges that have a minimum, they're in fair condition, but they're on the edge of going to poor condition, and do we bring those in and start getting a little bit ahead of the curve? So we're just trying to figure out how to tweak it moving forward.
It sounds like you are more moving forward. Todd, I really appreciate your spending the time explaining this process to us. It's intriguing, and we want to make sure we put a link on our website so people can look at what you're doing in more depth and more detail. Thanks for spending the time with us this morning.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, so long.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.